Welcome back to Master Debaters Presents Was It Worth It? The podcast where I go on a journey through the annals of movie history and watch all the classics that I've inexplicably left behind. My name is Toffer and today I am joined by the lovely Mr. Darren Weirman.
All right, Toffer.
how you doing, mate? All right.
Yeah, not too bad. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, my name's Darren Weymouth. I live in Manchester. At the moment, I'm an author. I've got a book coming out later next year with James Murray from Impractical Jokers. But other than that, I write science fiction, post-apocalyptic, cyberpunk, just generally stuff like that.
Now, just what is cyberpunk? Because I'm not sure of that. What is that?
It's not far future, like Star Trek, Star Wars or anything, or it's not like immediate future like Jurassic Park. It's near future with advanced technology, digital technology. So things like, there's books like Snow Crash, Altered Carbon on TV, Ghost in the Shell. That's
Cyberpunk. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Not Sixth Sense.
That baffled me. I don't know what cyberpunk is, bro. No, it's not there.
No, it's not.
The key word there was sci-fi.
Science fiction, yeah.
So, yeah, man. So the film we are doing today is, which I originally thought was pronounced Ex Machina, but it's not, because I'm an uncultured swine. It is Ex Machina.
Yeah, and I originally thought it was Ex Machina.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Yours sounds a bit different than mine. Mine sounds a bit more stupid. Ex Machina. I asked, this is quite a new film. I think it was 2015?
Yep.
I think this came out. Usually, it's an older film, and other than It, the recent It, this is the most recent film we've done. So, but I'll ask you the same question I always ask people anyway. When did this film first come into your life, and what were your first impressions?
This film first came into my life when I saw a trailer for it in 2015.
Yeah.
And the reason I really wanted to watch it is because I like my science fiction with a big anchor in reality. And when I say that, I mean...
Not zombies.
No, not the zombies. I like Star Trek, Guardians of the Galaxy, Star Wars, but they're far future and they're a little bit fantastical. And
that's a good word, that is.
It is. But then you've got the grubby dystopias as well, like Chappie and Elysium and District 9, and they're like 200 years into the future. But with things like Ex Machina,
yeah,
or something like Limitless as well, or Jurassic Park, that's here and now, so we can relate to it a lot more.
I have seen, doing research to this film, there are a lot of similarities between this film and Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people sort of put them sort of in the same category. But what was your first impression of the film when it first came out? What did you think?
I come out of the film and I thought, this is probably the best science fiction film I've seen in the last few years.
Nice. What was before this?
The best science fiction film before this?
Yeah. What did you have before this?
I think the one I came out of the cinema before this and just thought, wow, and blew me away more than anything was The Matrix.
Okay, yeah, okay. We've done that for this show. I hadn't seen that until about 6 months ago.
Yeah, and what did you think?
I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I just walked out and thought, what the hell was that? I mean, what the concept was mind-blowing.
Yeah. Well, I went in not knowing, obviously knowing bits, but the chap that told me to watch it, he said, just watch out for the religious undertones. I was like, oh, okay, I probably won't notice them. But then you get, like, punched in the face with them.
Yeah,
and then once you've picked the first one up, you're constantly picking them up throughout the film. And this film's a lot like that, really. There are a lot of... It's one of them. You watch this and you talk to people that have watched this, and it's a proper thinker of a film.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think that's another reason why I liked it so much. It's because it does make you think, doesn't it?
Mm, yeah.
I come out and I'm thinking, what are the real possibilities of this and what are the consequences as well? And I even considered how I'd interact with one of these things. I don't know if you did.
Would you... Look, because obviously we'll get into the characters and everything like that in a minute, but the main reason for the Caleb to be there was to interact with Ava. Mm-hmm. And he had to just figure out basically if he could talk to her and if she how they interacted sort of judged, like, if you pass, is it a Turing test it's called?
Yeah, the Turing test, where a human has to interact with a machine and come to the conclusion that it's dealing with something that isn't a machine, that's got intelligence, sentience. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you want to go into that knowing that she was a machine, or going in knowing that she was not knowing, just going in thinking you're talking to another person?
I think I prefer to go in not knowing. I think if I went in knowing it was a machine, I'd come out thinking it was a machine.
Yeah, it sort of clouds your judgment straight away, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I thought that when Caleb was told that he was going to go through this test, and he was told that artificial intelligence would have been created, I thought, well, that's just blown the test right out of the gate.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, well, even the look of her, like, obviously she dresses up a bit later on, but like, you can't look at that and not think anything other than what she is.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I mean, she's got a very attractive face, but I just kept looking at her stomach and her arms, like the transparent with the glowing wires in them.
Yeah, well, I think this film was made for about 15 million, and they won an Oscar for it, didn't they? They won an Oscar for visuals.
Yeah, it's not a great amount, is it, for what it was?
No, I
don't think it was ever introduced as like a blockbuster or a huge concept. It was more cerebral, but I think it was somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, good word. I got that red wrote down, yeah. It didn't really do very well either, did he? Like, it didn't come out and set the world on fire.
No, but I've experienced that with a lot of films that haven't done that. Did Sexy Beast with Ray Winston was excellent. I loved it, but hardly anyone I know has watched it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I know when Shawshank came out, that didn't really do a lot of numbers. That was sort of a grower.
Mm.
But the critics jumped straight on this film and loved it, didn't they? Like, it's got a really high rating on IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes and stuff like that. Like, it's really well, really, really well received, wasn't it, this film?
Yeah, yeah. I think, and I get this with fiction writing too, I mean, sometimes it's just impossible to tell what will resonate with a wide audience. You don't know. I mean, if somebody knew that, then they'd be a billionaire, because they keep pumping these films or books out constantly, but it's just impossible to tell.
Well, that's what Fast and Furious is, though, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just constantly pumping them out, even though they make no sense and they're not even good. Just pump them out, and they'll constantly, like the Transformers films, as long as they look half decent, they'll make money.
It's all special effects. If you can make like a robot turn into a car and smash a few bridges, then yeah, we're in. That's it. That's the formula.
Yeah. Let's do the plot of this, because we haven't even done that yet. Yeah. Right. A young programmer is selected to participate in a groundbreaking experiment in synthetic intelligence by evaluating the human qualities of a talking humanoid AI. Now, already, that's a lot of big words in a short amount of time.
Yeah, I think you can boil it down to that. He works for a company called Blue Book, which is a search engine like Google.
Basically Google, yeah.
Yeah, and the owner of Blue Book, called Nathan Bateman, he's a recluse. He lives somewhere in Alaska in a huge estate.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Caleb wins a competition to spend a week with him, which he thinks is mind-blowing. He's going to go out and see this hermit recluse who's awesome and intelligent.
Yeah, everyone's buzzing, aren't they? Everyone's proper buzzing for him.
Yeah, yeah. So he turns up. Nathan's there. He was a very interesting character we could talk about later.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and he basically says, I want you to take part in the Turing test, which is, I basically want you to be the human side of testing artificial intelligence to see if you think that it's sentient and it is actually intelligent. Yeah.
Sentient's a good word. A lot of good words. Yeah, so basically, that easy. That is the basic premise of this film. As complicated as you might want to get into it, that basically easy. It's a really small film as well.
Hmm. Yeah. But
very, very tiny film. Like, there's four people that are basically, that is it, and it's set sort of in his complex.
Mm-hmm.
So straight away, when we meet Nathan, he's a very odd man.
Mm.
Very peculiar man. What would you say, like, your early impressions of him were? Because there's a bit for me where it just completely changes.
Yeah, he turns up, he's hitting a punch bag, and he rips off his gloves, and you're thinking, okay, you know, he's going to be some cool guy, hermit, because he has to be, because he's so great. And then he turns around to him and says, oh, you'll have to excuse me, I've got the mother of all fucking hangovers. And Caleb says to him, oh, did you enjoy the party? And he just frowns at him and goes, what party?
Yeah, a bit awkward.
Yeah.
A little bit awkward now. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the first sort of signal that it was something I mean, you know, we've all done that, but in a film like this, I think it's a little signal to say there's something not quite right about this bloke.
Not all what it seems, yeah, definitely.
What about you? Well,
exactly the same. I was like, wow, okay, it's going to be a bit awkward. Like, you could tell, like, straight away when he's punching his punch bag, you could tell he's sort of like this macho, like, you know, he wants to look how big my dick is, look at my big house.
Yeah.
You've had to fucking get an helicopter to get here.
Yeah.
He establishes dominance on him straight away. And Caleb's quite a shy sort of person, isn't he? Like, he's a bit meek.
He is, yeah. He drops hints during the dialogue that he is quite a smart man when they're talking about the test and everything, but you're right, he's domineering. He keeps trying to get into technical detail as soon as he hears about it with Nathan, but Nathan just cuts him off at the pass. You know,
he completely cock-blocks him, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, yeah. Like, just shut the fuck up and get on with the testing, you know, and then we can have beers and be mates together afterwards and it's all going to be great. He's trying but failing to appear happy-go-lucky.
Yeah, he's sort of holding his hand as well. He's like, you will do this, you will do that. And like, even little things with the key card.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, there's only so many rooms you can go in because that's what I say.
The key card for me brought up the second big alarm for him, and it was a great line of dialogue. When he went into, they had the first power cut. They get power cuts complex and everything blares red. And he couldn't get out of his room. And when the power cut ended, there was only one room he could get into, and he walked in and there was a phone there and he picked it up. And Nathan was on the couch behind him, hammered with beers. And he goes, who are you going to call, Ghostbusters? And he goes, what? Excuse me. And he goes, Ghostbusters, it's a film where Dan Aykroyd gets oral off a ghost.
Yeah. which he does. Nobody talks about that.
No.
That never comes up. He does. He probably loves it as well.
Yeah.
So the thing with Caleb as well, he's, again, this meek, sort of shy person. But as soon as he gets shown into the room with Ava, his face lights up and he completely changes.
Mm.
You could tell straight away where it was going from there.
Yeah, I agree. He's smitten immediately when he sees him. And she's really... It's quite clever in the fact that you can understand why he's smitten, but you're also quite horrified at the same time because it's...
Yeah, exact same thing. Definitely, I know what you're saying. Because she's formed as a woman.
Mm.
And it's like, she's got this pretty face, but then it's like, well, there's... No. Stop it. Because like, the more it gets into the film as well, and the more like he's talking about his feelings and she's talking about her feelings, it's like...
It's awkward, isn't it, through the glass screen?
Yeah, oh mate, that's weird. That's weird. But yeah. So that sort of progresses, and he's got all these sessions with her, and that's got to build and stuff like that.
Yeah, it starts basic questions about each other, doesn't it? And then it gets onto her drawing a picture for him, and then she asks him quite directly what he thinks of her, and he looks all embarrassed, and she can read his micro expressions.
Yes, she's like a lie detector test, isn't she?
Yeah.
You can't... Every single thing she'll pick up on. So you can't hide it, really, can you?
Yeah. And while this is happening, you've got Nathan watching, like, in his... it's like Sliver, that film with the apartment block where he's got all the screens on. He's got like 1,000 post-it notes on the wall and videos, and he's watching as all these conversations progress. And you start to get the impression that how he explained the test is not exactly what he wants to happen.
Yeah. Well, the more we see of Nathan, the more you sort of see of who he actually really is.
Mm.
And like, he's got this weird God complex, and like he's like very egotistical, clearly an alcoholic.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's very rude to his the Japanese lady who lives in the house with them. She spills a bit of wine. He's very short with her.
Yeah, he kicks off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which brings me to like the main thing I found from this film, right? Now this film, a lot of like reviewers will review this film, and you run the risk when you're talking about this film of sounding really like snooty and high and mighty, because, well, I understand all the undertones of the film and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you get a lot of reviewers that'll review it like that, and they go, well, I appreciate the artwork and like, yeah, whatever, just talk about the film for what it is, right? Which is that's the only thing I can do when watching this film. Like, I can't pick up all of, like, I can only, what I see is what is anything I can work with. Like, I can do a bit of research after the fact. and I can find out things once I've watched it. But the whole time watching this film, as soon as I saw the Japanese, Kyoko, is that her name?
Yes, yeah, Kyoko, yeah.
He's created a sex robot.
Yeah.
That's a sex robot. Ava's a sex robot. She just happens to be smart. And sexuality in this film is a major thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he touches on it later on because he asks, he does, like, Ava's got this sexual, well, she's got this sexual attraction to Caleb, and Caleb's weirdly sexually attracted to her. Mm-hmm. And he does ask Nathan, like, is she actually flirting with me? Have you programmed her to flirt with me? Why have you given her a sex? Why have you done that? And he even says, because it's fun.
Yeah.
So the whole time, the sexuality is driving everything in this film. Ava uses her sexuality to get what she wants because she preys on Caleb being, I'm going to assume, a virgin. He's not sexually experienced at all. He's very like, he sees a fucking robot with a pretty face and he's like, yeah, go on then, I'll give you what you want.
Yeah, it's a techie blow-up doll, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah. And like, the animalistic instincts of people, of humans, leads to the actual weakness of the humans in this film. Mm-hmm. And then because she hasn't actually got those, she hasn't got that in her, that's why she can just use these men, get what she wants, and then leave.
I mean, it's definitely the case with Caleb. I think we can be fairly sure it's the case with Nathan as well, otherwise he wouldn't have designed them like that.
Yeah, well, he gives them, you know, vaginas and stuff. Well, we assume vaginas. He doesn't actually say that.
I think he says it's a hole with sensors. So,
which I do want to say, I would like to say that.
So if you do it the right way, you can make them happy. I love that conversation because he started to get really angry with Caleb, and then he dragged him in front of a Jackson Pollock painting to prove his point. You know, about the whole painting.
Yeah.
I think he throws his arms up in the air and goes, "Let's make this like Star Trek, okay? Engage intellect." And Caleb's like, "What are you on about?" He goes, "I'm Kirk. Your head's the warp drive. Engage intellect."
He gets really frustrated with him, doesn't he, throughout the film?
Yeah.
Like, he wants him to... Because he selected Caleb. Obviously, Caleb thinks he won, but he was actually selected. And, like, because he selected him for different reasons, he knows what he searches for. He's even been through... That conversation was class.
Yeah.
About porn and about him, like, he says, what about if you like watching black chicks? Why is it you like watching black chicks? Is it because this? He says, no, it's because you like black chicks.
Caleb, what's your type? He goes, type of what? I don't know, salad cream. Actually, one of the best scenes, I think, because he swings from happy to sad as well. That's another thing, which makes him so unstable and unpredictable. And a lot of the times it's due to alcohol, as you say. And there's one scene with Kyoko where Caleb's in front of the Jackson Pollock painting with her, and she starts unbuttoning a dress in front of him, and he's saying, no, you don't have to do that. And then Nathan walks...
Sex robot.
Yeah, Nathan walks in and he goes, I've told you it's no point talking to her. However, if you were dancing with her... And he flicks...
Yeah.
It's one of the weirdest scene I've ever seen, I think, in a science fiction film. He flicks a switch, like disco music starts, and then he does a synchronized, like BG style dance with the robot in front of him. I was sitting back in my chair thinking, what the fuck is happening?
Fuck this. I've got that written in my notes. I've just got dancing! Exclamation mark. Because it's just marvelous. It's like, it's just one of them. Hang on, what the fuck? Because if you're not paying attention to this film and you're sort of switching off, if you switch on at that point, you're like, hang on, what the fuck? Fucking hell's going on. And he got good dance moves as well.
Very good dance moves, especially considering he probably had about 10 bottles of beer. But yeah.
I'm a better dancer when I've had a few, though.
Oh, yeah. It just greases the wheels.
I thought he was going to say greases the word, then.
Oh, no. But I'm glad you noticed that one as well, because I just sat back on my couch with my mouth open thinking, yeah.
What the fuck?
But it's one of the things, I think, that makes it so good. I think with the Ghostbusters line, his dancing line and his Star Trek lines and that, these are all memorable. All things that stayed with me for a couple of years since I've watched the film.
Yeah. Well, I noticed as well, like you mentioned it earlier, every time Caleb tries to get information from him, he sort of texts him in another way and like, explains it, but doesn't. He never explains anything, really. He just shows him.
Yeah.
He won't give him any information, which is understandable. And, well, he gives him the information on the facial expressions, which I thought that was dead good as well. He's like, yeah, the way I got the facial expressions was I hacked everybody's phone and I got everybody's feed through their camera. And the reason nobody's told me off is because they all do it as well.
Yeah. No, I love that. That was cool.
Shit you up a bit, that does, because like, that could be real.
Yeah. No, that was good. And then they, I think Caleb starts to dislike him, doesn't he? And he starts to fall in love with Ava. I think that was the turning point. I think you probably saw that coming.
Well, there's that blackout and the score just drops and the music changes and it's like, oh, hang on. And then she sort of says, don't trust him.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all she says, don't trust him. And he's like, hang on, what the fuck? And then from then on, Nathan, he's a completely different person from then on, because obviously you're watching him from a different perspective and like you're picking up all the different things that he's doing and you're going, hang on.
Yeah. And that was the first point as well that I actually started to consider Ava as a conscious being as well.
Yes.
Because she's not, before it was just like the Q&A with him, it was all a little bit wooden. But then she's sort of...
Yeah,
she's coming out with something that's like, I mean, that's technically her father, her creator, isn't it? And she's going against him with Caleb.
The film sort of turned for me there. Because obviously she drops that on him, he's confused about it, and look, it's just the way the music changes. If you watch it again, listen back for the music, because the score throughout the film is tremendous. But it's at points like that where the music sort of changes and it gets very, very tense, and it's a very claustrophobic film as it is.
Oh yeah, big time. I mean, they do have the conversations where they go outside, where he's talking about the end of the world and everything, and quoting Oppenheimer and all this kind of stuff, which I do quite like stuff like that. I wouldn't say it gives it any depth, you know, because that'll probably be a little bit smart-assed, but you can tell that the...
Yeah. you want to get smart-assed, brother, get smart-assed. Go on, go for it.
No, it kind of like goes with the theme, because he does quote Oppenheimer. I think it was...
He's a genius. He's technically a genius, isn't he?
He is, yeah. And then when they come in and he gets Nathan drunk to... So he can set the security system up in a certain way that the next time they get a power cut, it will spring over. And
yeah.
When Nathan's drunk, he lies back and recites some stupid poem while he's waving his hand around in the air. But I had a look into that, and that's actually a poem in India that was translated by Oppenheimer 2 days before a failed experiment on the atomic bomb.
So that's one of the things that was constantly in my mind throughout this film. Because as I say, this is one of those films that you can dissect, and like different people will have a different opinion, different people will see different things, and obviously it's a very, it's like a critic's dream, this film, because like a smart-ass critic can like proper wax poetically about this film,
yeah,
and like get the big critic bollocks out and go, oh, I know all this about film, I went to school and I learned about all these terms. Yeah. But like, I would love, and I know this film probably is as smart as it tries to be. Mm. I would absolutely love for this film, right, someone to go up to the director and go, you know this film, did you mean to do this? And what was the meaning behind this? I'd love it to go, I didn't, mate. I just like robots.
Exactly, yeah. Like Will Gompertz from the BBC. I don't know if you've ever seen him.
Yeah, I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, sitting down in a chair opposite Garland and saying, so, you know, what surreptitious minds, you know, matched with the elegant splendour, you know, of the countryside. And he'd say, what the fuck are you talking about? I just wanted to make a sex robot.
I just love sex robots, mate.
Yeah.
That's the future. The future is... I do actually believe that, though. The first actual robots will be sex robots.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. There's something else, I think, that a base level of this film that a lot of people will relate to, rather than the high and mighty stuff with Oppenheimer, is that the characters and which one you end up rooting for. Because I like Nathan. I do like a good bad guy. I mean, I obviously wanted some consequences for him, but I found him mildly amusing. Whereas Caleb, I found him a little bit wet and
bit annoying.
A bit annoying. And he was set up to be like the protagonist, and I wasn't quite pulling for him.
He's a bit too keen as well. Like, he's a bit, oh, mate, don't be so desperate.
Yeah, you've got loads of free booze in the house. Stop acting like a...
fucking shut up and drink.
Yeah.
Enjoy the dance, man. Get in on that dancing.
Yeah, exactly. Get on be the third person in the team, you know. See a bit of disco dancing. But
yeah.
And it was only because he fancied the robot.
Yeah, which is, again, weird. There is a weird bit as well when he starts getting lost. And it's got like a bit of a shining effect, this film. Because like he's so isolated that it sort of turns him a little bit weird. And like Caleb gets really, really paranoid. And like he actually cuts himself, doesn't he, to try and... He sees how Ava's been. And he's like, oh, fuck. Well, I better check.
Yeah, am I a robot too?
Is
Blue Book created me? Nathan created me. And he does that. And then there's the character of Ava herself. And you kind of, I think she's sort of set up for you to feel a little bit sorry for her. And she does start becoming a little bit more human, like we said before, at that turning point. So who do you end up pulling for? They're all a little bit ambiguous.
Oh, yeah. I'd say that. But yeah, I'd definitely pull for Ava. I did like Nathan because I like the bloke who plays him. So like I see him and I like him anyway. But
very good, yeah.
He's very, very eccentric, and even though he's a knob, he's a genius. It's like, yeah, you do your boo boo. If you want to do poetry, you want to dance.
Yeah.
Get your kicks, man.
There's not many complete geniuses like that, I think, who aren't knobs.
I think you've got to be, haven't you?
Yeah.
He's got this massive god complex as it is anyway. But I like that. I think he's got a lot more depth than you actually, he gives away. Like, I think I'd love to know more about him. I'd like, if they were to go into the film a bit more, I'd like to know what his past was and, like, how long he's been. Like, just more about him. I think that'd be quite interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Because something might have turned him to drink, and the drink's the reason why we don't find more about him.
Yeah, he's probably got mommy issues. He's created sex robots.
Yeah. He's probably tired. With all these sex robots around the house.
He's got all the different colours of the rainbow as well in that cupboard.
Yeah.
Like, just like the little kids' toys, them superhero mashers. Just twist their head off, put a new one on.
off you go.
Off you go, let's have another one.
Yeah. Yeah, he's, and he actually, you're totally right with that god complex. He misquotes Caleb, doesn't he, quite early in the film, where I think Caleb says, if you create AI and it actually works... that's not the stuff of legends, that's the stuff of gods. And then he quotes him back saying, oh, I love that quote you said the other day. You wouldn't be doing the stuff of legends, you'd be a god.
Yes, I don't say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did that. Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, he nailed it there. I never put that connection together before.
So we do, I think we both pull for Ava at this point, though. I think most people are pulling for Ava at this point.
Yeah, because she feels like a trapped animal, and it's almost like if you created something... with artificial intelligence, you're just keeping it as a prisoner now, and a prisoner where they can clearly see that they're not human. And I'm completely with Ava.
Because he's horrible to her as well, isn't he, Nathan? Like, he goes into her and he rips a drawing up, and he knows that Caleb's watching. And he's like, oh, he's horrible to her. And I think that's where you go, right, then that's enough for Nathan. Something needs to happen to him. Maybe you're not a massive Caleb fan, but you really want Ava to get out.
Yeah. You're thinking, at this point, I'm thinking Caleb and Ava are going to run off into the sunset, possibly after giving Nathan a good kicking. That's where I thought it was. Where did you think it was going to go at that point?
I thought they'd get, you'd get a bit of a slap.
Yeah.
They'd get the other sex robot as well. They'd escape with her.
Yeah.
Because she, even though she can't speak English, she's got rights.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's got a wetware brain too.
Yeah. So I thought they'd all get out, because the helicopter's coming. The helicopter's coming to take him back. So it's like, okay, then he set his plan up because he's a smart man. He knows what he's doing. He's gonna get Ava. He's gonna get the sex robot, and they're gonna do one. And fucking Nathan's going to be there shaking his fist, going, oh, you bastards.
Maybe if it wasn't for you pesky robots and employees. Yeah.
Me bloody sex robots gone.
I like the setup for the ending.
Lovely twist as well. Lovely little twist.
Yeah, so Caleb sets up the security, so the next time there's a power cut, which it turns out were triggered by Ava. We never actually find out, but it gives her a bit of a scary superpower there. The power cut happens. All of the doors are opened. Ava manages to escape. Nathan reveals to Caleb that he chose him based on his porn choices on his
which is, again, that's quite terrifying.
It is quite terrifying. and he actually punches Caleb. And I wasn't particularly bothered when he hit him either, which is...
They deserved it. He deserved a bit of a smack.
He did deserve a bit of a smack. And again, he was supposed to be the protagonist. And you're thinking, yeah. I mean, Nathan's probably going to get what's coming to him, but he probably did deserve that.
He's going to steal his sex robot. Of course he deserved it.
Yeah. Two of them.
Yeah, take one. Leave with the Japanese one. I'll let you go.
Yeah. Leave Kayoko. I know she spills wine, but...
She can dance.
Yeah, very good. I mean, they've obviously trained at that. I mean, it's well choreographed. but imagine that, dancing with a robot. Mind you, I suppose you could get the robot just to copy you, couldn't you? So you could have 8 pints and...
And she'd just do whatever you do?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an interesting concept, that is.
Yeah. Enter the Olympics, I bet. Yeah. Cheating. Yeah, so Nathan goes downstairs to try and stop the robots escaping, and Kayoko stabs him in the back after Ava's... Which,
that's horrible as well, that is. Like, for quite a film, we're not... Obviously, there's the bit where Caleb cuts himself. But, like, where the knife just slides into him.
Yeah, it's their power, isn't it? And as you say, it's a lot more shocking because there's no real violence in the film before that, apart from a few punches.
I've seen a lot of people that have... they sort of turn the back on the film when it turns to that. As I say, it doesn't really need the violence, but I think it does. I think he's basically keeping them as slaves.
Yeah. Before it's happened, we were given a little bit of a snapshot where he's been mistreating these robots on the CCTV footage that Caleb uncovers, and the robots have gone out of their mind, banging their arms against these glass
walls.
Oh, that's
horrible as well. That is, yeah, that's a bit horrible. That is,
yeah, till they just go mental, and he's dragging them around and. So I understand. I mean, they've got intelligence. They're being kept like caged creatures, and he treats them like utter shit. So I got the stabbing. I thought it was very well done, and he probably deserved it in the end.
Yeah, I'd say so. It shows how flimsy they are, though.
Yeah,
because he whacks the one, and her arm just falls off.
Yeah, and then he gets the dumbbell and smashes the other in the mouth. It just has a big gouge out of her, and she flops.
Which, yeah, that poses more questions that we'll get into a bit later on. But, So Ava's out now, and it gets stabbed, and then she pops her head in, and a lot of people have interpreted this different ways, but she pops her head into Caleb, who's waiting for her, and she just says something like, "Will you wait for me," or something, or "stay in here," or something. What did she say to him?
It's one of those two. It's just like, "Can you stay here, please?" Something like that.
It's something like that. Will you wait here or something like that.
Well, yeah, and at that point, I assume that she didn't want Caleb to see her finish off Nathan.
Yeah, or get dressed as a person.
Oh, yes. Yeah, oh, God, yeah, of course she did that, didn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, she Velcros the bits on... Well, it looks like Velcro. But, like, yeah, she becomes this woman and she admires a physical form. Fair enough. I'm partial to a bit of free boob in a film.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, it's it creates some fine artificial skin for him, hasn't he? It works well.
He has. I did notice as well. He's a bit of a... He's like, he's not the typical man. Like, he's not created blonde big boobs.
No, he didn't like them, did he?
No, which I found quite interesting. But again, that probably would have turned all the critics' noses up, and they're going, "Oh, no. The women come in all shapes and sizes." Shut up. Just enjoy the free boob, dickhead.
Yeah. It's just enjoy it for what it is. You don't. I mean, it's that kind of things are relevant. But yeah, it's interesting that those are his choices. But yeah, I mean, when she goes back down to see him, she does the weird stabbing as well, but this time right in his front.
Oh yeah, yes. And I thought she stabs him again, didn't she?
Yeah. Well, Kayoko stabs him in the back, and she stabs him in the front.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the end of Nathan. He staggers along, and she actually kneels down in front of him when he's taking his last few breaths.
Yes, she sort of admires it, doesn't she?
Yeah, and then takes his key card, you know, while he's in his death throes.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, okay, she's got the master key to the place now. Nathan is dead.
This is where the ride off in the sunset.
Yeah, this is where the ride off in the sunset. Caleb, you know, is going to recover from his punch. and he's going to get to be with the woman of his dreams as well. And she said...
Even though it's a robot.
Yeah, even though it's a robot, with things in the right places. And and she's told Caleb that she wants to be with him as well. So you're thinking, okay.
The whole way through the film, she sort of... She wants to go on... She tells him, I want to go on a date with you. And then she shows off for him. She dresses up for him. She's like, this is what I'd look like if I was a normal person. Yep. This can work. We can run away together.
Yeah. She's obviously got a very long battery. We never find that out.
Yeah, because at one point she's on charge, isn't she? Mm. Which is another question.
Yeah.
So yeah, that all happens. And then obviously she pops ready and says, will you wait for me? Gets changed into looking like a person. And then fucks off.
And fucks off, leaving Caleb locked in the house so he can't get out.
Yeah, because it's established early on as well that without the master key, obviously some rooms you can't get in and out of, but he's trapped. Basically, that's it. He's done. He's left there to die now.
Yeah, he's done and dusted. He could probably... There's some supplies around him, but he can't get out.
I'm assuming there's going to be bottles of water in there because there's bottles of water randomly everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, the bloke drinks a lot, so I imagine he's got a fridge full of water everywhere.
Yeah, and beer and everything, yeah. There's going to be supplies, but he's going to die there. I think that's the implication, and Nathan's dead, and Ava is out of the house. Now, that's where a lot of people think that the film should have finished.
Okay, what do you think?
I don't agree with them. I think the only scene I would have cut from that is the helicopter scene with her getting on, because you're thinking, why would the pilot pick her up when he knows he's dropped off Caleb?
Yeah, why wouldn't he ask her either?
Yeah, well, I found out a little bit about that. I did some research, and... two of the actors have mentioned, the lady, Alicia Vikander and Oscar Isaac, have both said the actual end scene was supposed to be her with the pilot, and they went from the pilot's point of view to hers, and they showed what she could see, so we were looking from her point of view, and she couldn't hear a word he was saying. She'd just be detecting loads of waves and impulses and beeps. So they just wanted to show that her view of the world had evolved to completely... advanced and different way to what our brains work, and
like Neo in the Matrix.
Yeah, and she's just working on a different plane, like I don't know, seven dimensions. So that's what the plan, but obviously that was cut, and it just showed her going in the chopper, and then the next scene was her going, just walking around a busy city street,
looking a bit scared.
Yeah, she does have that kind of potentially frightened face, though, a bit like Daenerys in Game of Thrones. So
yeah.
If I was put doing the ending myself, I would have had her going out in the lift like that and then just cut scene and go straight to her on the street, because then you know that she's resourceful because she's managed to get there herself, and you don't have to think, well, why did the pilot pick her up?
Yeah, well, yeah, because you've got to assume as well, if she's basically Google,
yeah,
she should know. She's got like maps, Google Maps, so she wouldn't struggle to find anywhere, really.
No, she wouldn't. She could probably upload a manual of how to fly a helicopter too. And
that would have made more sense if she'd have killed the pilot and flew off.
Yeah, I did rewind the end scene a couple of times to see if I could see inside the cockpit.
Okay,
but I couldn't.
It does ask a lot of questions. Like a lot of people are like, well, what happens to Caleb? What would she do next? Like, where did she go? Like, what do you think she did? So like, if this film carries on from there, she's in the busy intersection, she looks a bit, you know, deer in the headlights.
Well, it's hard to know what she'll do. I assume that she'll just go around the world learning more and more and more and becoming even more powerful and possibly creating more versions of herself by using that lab. I honestly don't know. I would like to think that, well, I wouldn't like to think, but I assume that Caleb dies.
Yeah, he's a bit of a genius though, isn't he? So like, I don't know if there's a computer in the room. I don't know if, like, what was on the, was there like a keypad on the door, or was it just a card to somewhere to show your card?
There was computers in the room, and as soon as he touched the keyboard, it went to immediate power down. But then again, that was something else that confused me, because if it went to power down because of the code that he'd put in, didn't that mean that the doors would all open again?
You'd think so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And like, why wouldn't Nathan have like a shutdown for his robots?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he have like, even if it's just a word, If you just said "kin falafel" and then "oh, powder,"
yeah, falafel kill switch.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? Like you've made these fucking sex robots, and like you know the strength because you see them slide a knife into you. Like if one of them malfunctions, so she's got her mouth, you know, somewhere where you don't want it to malfunction.
You're right. Yeah. Okay.
It takes one glitch, and there's no point in you having a sex robot anymore.
No, not whatsoever. So a kill switch would have been good. On top of that, the security just seemed to be glass doors, and there was quite a lot of space upstairs in the house to go out onto balconies and what have you. I just found it, when he was bashing that stool against the reinforced glass door at the end, thinking, surely there must be another way out. Because he's upstairs, isn't he? He isn't downstairs where the whole test environment is.
No, yeah, he's upstairs, yeah. I think so, yeah. Yeah, because she walks downstairs. Yeah, that's right, yeah. I'd like to think that he could get himself out of the room. But then what? That's another thing. You say he does get out. He can't use the phone.
And he's thousands of miles from anywhere. Because right in the opening scene of the film, he said, where does Nathan's estate start? And the pilot says, you've been flying over it for the last 2 hours.
Yeah. It's a big estate.
And it's freezing as well. There's ice fields when he's flying there. So it's going to be difficult for him to get to anywhere with civilization.
It's quite a scary thought, isn't it, really, if you get left alone? I don't like being on my own anyway. Even in my own house.
Not when it's dark, no.
No. Nope.
Yeah.
I have got one thing that somebody's mentioned, and I want to ask your opinion on it.
Yeah.
Do you think, because near the end of the film, it comes up, Ava test 7 or something like that. But at this point in the film, Ava is already free. So do you think that Ava's test 7 was because she's trapped a human and she's going to go back and run experiments on Caleb?
When did it say Ava test 7? I can't.
It says it's like, because it's a number of tests, isn't it? And it comes up, Ava tests, I think it says test 7 or something like that.
At which point?
But at this point, it's already when she's already like established that she's going to be free. So there is going to be no Ava test 7.
Do you know what it could mean? It could mean that all these tests were Ava's tests.
That's a good shout, that is.
Yeah, I think that's more likely. So when we were seeing test 1, test 2, or day 1, we were thinking these are Caleb's, but they were Ava's.
Yeah, so do you think that she played him the whole time then?
Yeah.
She didn't make a decision halfway through. She knew what she was doing the whole time.
I do, yeah. And Nathan even told him that. He said, I've basically created a rat in a maze. I've given her limited opportunities to get out, and you're probably her only chance. She's manipulated you. And he turned out to be completely right.
So what do you think was the best case scenario for Nathan? What did Nathan want out of this? What was the ideal ending for Nathan?
I think the ideal ending was where they finished, but not having the guy
stabbed.
Yeah, but not having Caleb outsmart him by doing it the day before, so the security system changes actually worked. I think he wanted to end it there, thinking, okay, I've proven Ava used the resources and manipulated him to try and get out. That's real artificial intelligence. You've been played. Sorry about that. Go back to work.
Yeah, fuck off.
Yeah, yeah. Shoo.
Yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah. He got what he wanted. He wanted, because obviously you put the sexuality thing in for a reason. It worked. And like, again, it goes to show you, no matter how smart you are,
your brains isn't always in your head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No matter how smart this film wants to be, that is the main thing I take from this film. Like, you can be the smartest computer programmer in the world, but you see a nice looking lady and everything fucking changes.
Yeah, even if it's a transparent robotic lady with a rubber face.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So, was it worth it?
Yes. I watched this twice. The first time I watched it, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the tension. I enjoyed how claustrophobic it was. Cerebral is a great word. And the film was very, like, the pacing of this film, like some people I've seen say that it's a bit dull, and like it moves at like a snail's pace. Which at times it does, but I think that helps because you don't want it moving fast and you don't want quick cuts for the camera, because you want to, like, it puts you there and it makes you feel awkward and you feel uncomfortable at times, and like it moving so slow. And then at the end, like, I think the end of the film is probably about 6 minutes. Like, it's not long. Like, once he punches him, it doesn't mess about long after that. Like, she takes a while to get changed. But like the scenes, like, oh, he gets stabbed, he kicks off, he tries to fight back, and no, he's dead. And then she just goes. Like, he doesn't mess about. So the whole time it takes to get you there, like, I think the pacing's brilliant. And then the second time I watched it, I picked up on the score, and I think the score was tremendous of this film. And like the performances are absolutely tremendous.
Yeah. Considering it was one location, pretty much. I mean, I know it was shot in two different locations in Norway and Pinewood Studios, but it was all pretty much around Nathan's house. Considering it was pretty much two characters and an AI robot in one location, it was surprising how gripping it was. And I think you're right. If they'd have moved the pace any faster, it would just come a little bit frantic, and you didn't get a chance to think about anything.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of things are left to breathe as well. Like with the pacing, like something will be dropped on you, and then it'll allow you to process it as the film's still going on. Whereas if it moved quicker, you'd be sort of bewildered, and you'd be like, hang on, what the fuck just happened there? Oh, and you're giving me something else now.
Yeah.
Like, I think it purposely moves very slowly, and like it takes, I think if the performances weren't as good, it would have fell on its arse. But because obviously Nathan and Ava, even if you don't like Caleb as much, which I don't think many people do, but the performances from Nathan and Ava, even Kyoko, are so strong that you allow it to breathe and you allow it to do this because you're invested.
Yeah, but you're completely right there. I mean, imagine if the Nathan was Hugh Grant and
that's number two.
Yeah, imagine if he was Hugh Grant, Caleb was Andrew Lincoln. And Ava was... I'm trying to think of someone who's really dull and wooden. Keira Knightley. She's,
there you go. Yeah. Horrible.
Yeah. It wouldn't have been half the film. I completely agree. The actors made it.
I can't get that film out of my head now, though. Fucking Hugh Grant just mumbling his way through the film.
How odd, a robot.
Oh, yes, sex robots. Oh.
What are you doing now? Turing test? Oh, my gracious.
I would pay to see Hugh Grant dance, though.
Yeah. I'd also, I'd probably pay to see the robot stab him at the end as well.
Yeah, good shout. Good shout. Favourite scene?
There's so many good scenes and good dialogue, but I would have to say the disco dancing.
Oh yeah, I'm with you. 100%.
It's just sometimes in a film you're surprised. Or TV? Do you ever watch Game of Thrones?
Yes.
Yeah. When the Mountain and the Viper, was it the Viper? Or they're having the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, and his head gets popped like a melon. I did read the books, so that came as a complete surprise to me. And the disco dancing thing was kind of that level of surprise where you're just thinking,
what the fuck?
Yeah.
Hey! Yeah. Has there been another scene in a film that's done the same thing to you that you can think of off the top of your head?
Let me think off the top of my head. It'd probably have to be a mainstream one. So, have you seen Misery?
Yes, I watched it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's such a good film, isn't it? I mean,
tremendous film.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder, have you read the book?
Yes, yeah, I've read the book.
Is that worth a go? Or is Stephen King on lots of cocaine on that one as well?
I think Stephen King, my personal opinion, is very hit and miss. And I think this is one of the occasions where you're probably just safe to keep watching the film. Okay. But obviously, when she puts the plank between his legs and smashes his ankles with a sledgehammer, that's a moment where you just... When you first see it, I've seen it about 4 or 5 times and I still turn away.
Yeah. It's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah. If you had any more, you know, where you've seen the scene and just thought, what have I just watched there?
I watched Chainsaw Massacre the other day. And the scene at the end, like the dinner scene, where everyone's just screaming, you're like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
Like, it's a weird film as it is, but then that happens at the end, and you're like, he's like, because for me now in 2017, it's weird, but I can only imagine people's reactions in the 70s when fucking weird. It's just that was one of them. I was like, oh, okay, that's weird.
Yeah. I've just thought of another one actually, and I just had to have a quick Google search because I can't remember it. have you seen Deep Blue Sea with the sharks?
Is that the Samuel L. Jackson one?
That's right. Yeah. About three quarters of the way through it, Samuel Jackson stands up and he's making a really dramatic speech about how they're going to get out of it.
Oh, yeah.
And the shark just comes out of the water and eats him. What?
There's a lot of weird things like that, though, but especially because of the pacing and the tone of this film, I think that this has got to be one of the weirdest scenes.
Yes.
Just because of the tone of the film, and it's just like, hang on. What the fuck? I bet when they read it in the script, I bet they went, what?
Yeah. Well, why have you... Because it's a test lab at the end of the day, isn't it? It's a test facility.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not supposed to have disco dancing music and flashing lights and everything.
Fucking hell. Have you got any more questions? Anything else this film left you thinking about?
I suppose the question I'd ask you is, do you think you could ever be attracted to an artificial intelligence robot woman? If she had all the skin on and hair, yeah, and she knew you're charged, do you think it's physically within you to be attracted like Caleb was?
Do I know it's a robot?
Yes, you do. An intelligent robot, a sentient robot.
I'm from Willenorth. It doesn't make a difference if they're intelligent or not. I don't know, because if you probably, yeah.
Mm.
Like, I don't know if I could be sexually attractive. I could probably find her attractive, but in the same way, I can find a man attractive, and I'm a straight person, but I can look at a man and go, well, he's attractive.
Yeah, I mean, you know the kind of difference, you know. I mean, Gerard Depardieu is an ugly man, you know. We can all say
that's a fucking random poll.
Yeah, well, the difference between ugly and attractive, you know.
Why is Gerard Depardieu just floating about your brain? What's that about?
I just thought he was ugly and he sprung to mind. I don't know. You must have someone ugly in your mind.
I can't get Gerard Depardieu out of my head now.
Because he's ugly.
Probably. Oh, fucking, I thought that's just a really, that's a peculiar point. I like that. That's tickled me.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you? What do you think?
I think I'm the same as you. It's because ultimately I would know that it's a program. It's an evolving program, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's not human. And although it can have sentience and traits and develop and have emotions and everything, I think I'd always have that alarm at the back of my head saying it's not real.
It's a robot.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest concern with it. But as far as taken away from the film and everything, it did get me thinking that these things, artificial intelligence, is coming at some time in the future.
Yeah, how close do you think we are?
Well, it's impossible to say, isn't it? I mean, it could be. With the exponential rate of processing power and all the research and money that's going into it, I wouldn't be surprised if we could have artificial intelligence in the next 20 years, perhaps. Yeah. But I think to try and mimic consciousness is probably not within our lifetimes. What do you think?
What the director of the film says is quite interesting. I think he said something like, we are only, I think he said 10 minutes away from this film being a possibility.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, to be fair, like, obviously you don't know everything that's going on, and then say if Google wanted to create a fucking robot with the amount of money and the amount of, you know, resources they've got, who's to say they can't? I mean, there's,
well, we've got cybernetics now that move on brain signals on command. I'll tell you where I think it'll come along. There's a technology called Claytronics. I don't know if you know much about this.
No. Dazzle me.
I'll dazzle you. If you've heard of, you've probably heard of nanobots, like the microscale
Red dwarfs.
The microscale computers, like little specks of dust.
Yeah, that create everything in its previous appearance. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So yeah, that's Claytronics. They're called CATOMs, and they can assemble into tangible objects on command.
Yeah.
So they've already got this working at the Carnegie University over the pond. And they're saying that in 10 years into the future, maybe even 5, it's developing so fast, instead of FaceTiming someone, you could call them and your body would be scanned and an assembled version of you would appear next to them in the living room and you can actually touch them, shake hands, do whatever
that'll
you like.
That'll be used for sex, that will.
It will be used for sex, because then you think, well, hang on, if you can create a assemble into a human, why can't you just channel signals in it, telling it exactly what to do and act like...
Now, why can't you download somebody that you find attractive?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you can take human form of who you're speaking to, then surely they can assemble into any form. And then it goes to exactly what we're saying. And because they're all heated, they can actually... The first test they did was changing the cover of a Ferrari from red to green and heat sources. So it could all be heated in the different places, like, you know, it'd be hotter under the armpits and...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, now, like, scary,
isn't it, that? It is scary. It is scary. So, I mean, it can go to those exact levels, and that could be 10 years into our future. And people go, oh, no way, that's not going to happen. But, I mean, think where we were 20 years ago.
Well, yeah, you thought you'd have a car that can drive itself.
Yeah, well, it's a mobile phone with your email on, internet, social media, and everything. It didn't exist.
No, it's quite scary.
Mm. But now we just all take it for granted and think it's been here like forever.
Would you like to see artificial intelligence in your lifetime?
I'm not sure, because what if it starts developing and producing and then comes to the conclusion that humans are standing in their way?
It's game over, brother.
It could well be. I mean, there's something called the grey goose scenario with nanorobotics and intelligence, that it could just come to the conclusion that it can, we're the ones damaging the planet, we're the ones creating all the mess, we're the ones cutting down forests, we're the ones clogging up the atmosphere and everything, and they can run themselves efficiently. And they might just think, well, we want to live on here a few more centuries, and by getting rid of them, that might just be possible.
That is pretty much the storyline to the Avengers 2.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, like Ultron, the robot they create, pretty much realizes that we're destroying the world. We're not necessary anymore. And like, if he wants to destroy the world, well, it wants to destroy the world and then recreate it, you know, in a way that won't self harm.
Yeah. It's very much worth thinking about, but I don't know. I'm quite happy with the era that I've been born in now, sort of right where I was young, right at the cusp of it all kicking off, and I'm experiencing it now through my life, but very much like you are. I'm enjoying it. I mean, I would love to see where we are in a few hundred years' time.
Yeah, would you like to go forward and have a look?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I mean, if somebody offered you, if you could go forward in time and see what we were doing,
how far forward would you go? You only get one chance.
Oh, well, that's an interesting question. I don't want to go too far forward, because I think we won't understand the world around us in 300 years' time. I think our brains will be processing a lot faster, and things will be... I think it'll be quite alien to us. As you know, if somebody from 300 years ago come to now, they just wouldn't understand it. Wouldn't understand TVs, phones, our fashion.
Again, mate, I live in Willenhall. There's still a couple of them knocking about.
Oh yeah, there's plenty around Manchester, especially all the ones on Spice in the city centre. Jesus. I would say one shot deal. I would probably go to the year 2100. So
ooh, okay,
that's 83 years into the future.
Yeah.
Because I think that it'd still be within our grasp. I still understand a lot of it. Sunderland would still be in the championship.
I'd like to think that that's the first thing you'd check.
Of course it is. Like, wouldn't you check on Wolves?
Yeah, 80 something years into the future. What do you want to know? How the fucking hell are the Wolves doing?
Are we still in the championship or what?
It's not a bad share, 80 something years, because that's a lifetime, isn't it?
It is. Everyone you know is dead, so you don't have to grieve, you know, massively. Or you would probably imagine. I mean, I know they say there's the first person who's going to live to 150 has already been born now, but I imagine that'll be an outlier. So everyone you know is dead, so you can go in with a fresh pair of eyes, have a look around, and see how things changed. And I think that'd be an interesting experience. What about you?
I'll probably go about 50 years.
Mm.
Because I think it seems like now, like I don't know much of what's going on, but it seems like we're on the cusp of a lot of things at the minute.
I agree.
So I think if I go too far, I'll have missed. They'll be ahead of what, he's coming next. Like, they'll say in the next 50 years, there'll be that big thing that happens. And then in the 50 years after that, it'll have changed and changed and changed. So I would like to see the first of... It's not really the first flying car, but like that sort of deal. Like, I'd say in the next... Well, they've already got cars that drive themselves now, haven't they? Whether they're safe or not is another thing. But I'd say the self-driving cars get rolled out in the next, 10 years?
Yeah.
And then I think years on from that'll have developed. And then, maybe in about 50 years, we'll have something that... There's got to be something that's going to happen. I mean, like you said, look, 20 years ago, look at the difference.
I get what you're saying, because like 10, 20 years ago, we can imagine where we are. We can extrapolate the tech we've got and think, okay, we know where we'll be. Phones might be a bit smaller. We might have holographic TVs and all this kind of, we can see what's coming in the near future, but that's a bit more of a stretch, isn't it? It's like the next phase of our technological evolution, because that's what runs our society nowadays more than anything, isn't it? It's tech.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Hmm. But what about if you could go back just to one place in time?
A time in history or just a time?
Yeah, well, okay. You could just go back to a time in history or witness one historical event.
Oh, JFK.
Yeah?
JFK, 100%. That's possibly like people have got all the conspiracy theories and they're fascinated by different things and whatever. I am absolutely fascinated by the JFK conspiracy.
Yeah,
so whenever anybody asks me this question, I always go back to that. I will fucking put myself near the grassy knoll, not on, because I don't want to get fucking shot. And I don't want to get in the way. I don't want to ruin it. I mean, I've seen the Red Dwarf episode. They're ruining
it. I've seen that as well. Maybe sometime in the future, you do time travel and you are that person on the grassy knoll.
Mate, that's a fucking... but I'm absolutely fascinated by that whole conspiracy and how it works. And I watched a documentary on it the other day with, do you know Jesse Ventura is?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
I mean, he's an egg case anyway. But the same with most conspiracy theories, like people that have got the earth's flat. It's like, yeah, okay, shut up, you're full of shit. But there's always facts to back up every side of a conspiracy theory, which even if you know it's bollocks, it's still interesting to look at.
Yeah.
Like, even the flat earth, which is... Fucking shut up. But, like, they'll offer you facts, and they'll go, yeah, but look at this, and you go, yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah, I mean, it is true. We did one where... I mean, a lot of people believe that Willy Wonka is a serial killer, and...
I'd say so, 100%. He's a sick bastard.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Sociopath.
Big time, yeah. The whole thing about it is weird when you start analysing it, but, yeah... Did you see the Stephen King series on the JFK shooting?
No.
Yeah, it's called 11/23/63.
Shit! Yeah, I've heard about it. Yeah, I have heard about this.
It's like a bloke in an extended version of Groundhog Day. He's living in modern day. He goes back to a portal, and it's a few weeks before the JFK shooting, and he just gets sucked into the whole thing. It's really good to watch if you're into that, because they have all the characters involved at the time. But what's your spin on this? Do you have a preference to how it actually went down?
Well, there's two, but I always go back to the mafia involvement, the fact that he had so many ties to the mafia. Maybe the mafia didn't do it, but I know he had a lot of problems with the CIA, and he had a lot of problems with his stuff with Cuba, and there's even a conspiracy theory that the FBI actually did it because he pulled everybody out of Cuba, and there's like the whole, there's just loads of interesting things. But I think that because the mafia took out Lee Harvey Oswald, Jack Ruby is the one who shot Lee Harvey Oswald. I don't think he was in the mafia, but he was around it, and he owned a bar that like the mafia sort of owned, and he was just sort of the face of it. They took out Jack Ruby. They tidied it up a bit. So I can't look past them for not being a big part of it.
I mean, they both seemed to die very quickly, didn't they? Harvey Oswald, and then the person who killed Harvey Oswald, and then would get to speak. I think the weird thing for me when I was watching that, it could have all went down exactly as reported, but you're right, there are some really odd things about the car when it arrived in hospital, and how the surgeons were actually ushered away as well.
Yeah, yeah. Like, in that Jesse Ventura thing, he recreates the actual shot, and he's got the exact same gun. And three shots were done in 6 seconds. And Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't an expert by any stretch of the imagination. He was familiar with the weapon, but apparently he wasn't this marksman, this expert marksman that you needed to be. And no matter how fast people tried to recreate the three shots in 6 seconds, they couldn't do it in less than eight.
Yeah. No, it's the only way I could imagine you could do it. I mean, I used to be in the army with a semi-automatic rifle, but he had a bolt-action rifle.
He had a bolt, yeah. So you have to reload after every single shot. Yeah. And like, apparently it's a good pull on the actual, I don't know what it's called, but to reload it, you have to really yank on it to get it ready for another one.
Yeah, just pull on the handle, and then you have to really slam it forward to make sure the bullet goes into the chamber. Mm. Then you have to refocus again. You know, then you
car's moving as well, so
moving target. Yeah, it's not feasible really that you could get three shots off in 6 seconds and do that unless you were in a Stallone movie or something.
It's absolutely fascinating. What about you? Where would you go?
I mean, I quite like reading about some of our old battles and everything, but it'd probably be a little bit too dangerous to position yourself. You know, like on the at Hougoumont Farm in Waterloo. No, it's too dangerous. I think it'd be really interesting to have a look at Henry VIII's Tudor court, just how it was all going down. Maybe in a crowd, on Tower Hill, when they were going to do one of those executions, just to see how brutal it really was.
Hmm. Are you interested in all that sort of history?
I do. I like it. I mean, I find the social history a lot more interesting than just like the cold facts that we get about our king and queens. You know, that's usually how it's presented, isn't it? And these are all the major players. They never talk about the butcher who lives in like his little shop in London and whatnot. I quite like that aspect. I'd probably have a roam around the streets.
Yeah, like early London, like Jack the Ripper sort of time. I think that'd be quite fascinating.
Yeah, until you get a bucket of shit tipped on your head from like
I'd find a way to shoot myself in the face. Nah.
Yeah. Like, oh no, you've got the falafel word to get out of it.
See, that everything needs that fucking falafel word. I'm telling you now.
Yeah.
We need to get on to NASA. If you're going to create sex robots, NASA, you need that fucking kill switch.
You need to copyright it now and take it into Dragon's Den.
Yeah, I've got no idea how to do it. But listen, just in case, that word's mine.
Yeah, I'll give you 20% of this company. You know, for what's your pitch? Well, falafel.
Yeah. What else? That's pretty much it, mate. That's all I got. You got a company name? I haven't.
Yeah. What's your figures like for the just done?
Yeah, no idea, mate. You do all that shit. You've just got my word. There you go. Falafel.
Yeah, I discussed it on Skype. So are you in or out? Yeah. In hindsight, I don't think that would work.
No, probably not. Now you said it out loud, it sounds a bit daft.
Yeah.
Why don't you drop all of your information for the people listening, like your Twitter, where they can get previous books that you've done, anything you want to pimp out, mate?
Okay, Twitter, I'm just Darren Weirmouth. It's DarrenWeirmouth. Uh-huh. My website's darrenweirmouth.com, where you can find links to my books. Or most of them sell on Amazon as well. So, yeah, I mean, if you're interested in science fiction, dive in and let me know what you think.
Lovely. Just drop a bit of information on Awakened.
Awakened is a book that's coming out next April, May, June, July. There's different release dates in different countries. It's a book I'm doing with James Murray from Impractical Jokers. He wrote this 13 years ago, and he got together with me, and we worked on it. And it's very exciting. It's set in the New York subway. It's high tension. It's a fast-paced thriller. It's got some subterranean creatures in there that I've always been quite scared about with the Hollow Earth theory. And that's why I like working on the project with Murray as well, and the fact that I was able to help him bring it to fruition after all these years.
Are you into that, the Hollow Earth thing? Are you big into that?
I don't necessarily believe it, but I like the idea of it. It does frighten me.
That's what I mean, though. It's one of them. Like, oh, it sounds a bit daft, but then some people have got them little bits, them snippets, and you go, well, you know what?
How can you prove a mile below the crust, you know, where this the water still seeps through, and there's algae and everything, that some creatures that are there. We can't prove it, can you?
Yes.
Can't prove it doesn't exist.
Exactly. I think it's definitely interesting.
So that's you can get that Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Go to the Harper Voyager books.com or harpervoyagerbooks.co.uk, and it's available there too. Are you going to read it?
Yes, definitely.
Good.
Yeah, it says monsters and lasers. I mean,
oh, you can't beat monsters and lasers. I mean, what do you need?
Boobs.
Yeah. Well, two wrote the book. There you go.
Sex robots. That's the next book. Sex robots.
Yeah. Sex robots is. I think that's. I'm writing another book at the moment. It's time travel related, which is quite interesting. Ooh. What we've just been talking about, but that's probably for another day.
Lovely.